This week on 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour, we're going to talk a lot about the next year, 2 years, 3 years of iPhones.
just a few iPhone rumors.
Yeah. Thanks, Quo. And then some new stuff and software betas this week. But let's start off. I want to mention a couple of things. The first is, so when I moved to Orlando 4 months ago, I really wanted to be able to kind of get my bearings of like which direction things are in. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to do that with CarPlay and Apple Maps. It's kind of frustrating. It's like, I just want my car to give me the, you know, north, northeast, whatever, as I'm driving, so I can associate that direction with where I'm going. And over the weekend, I found how to do it by accident. What I was trying to do was remove favorited addresses from maps. And I think it was just because I'm on the beta version of iOS that it was bugging out and just nothing worked. But because I was digging around in settings, I found that there's a compass toggle for CarPlay and it's off by default. But once you turn it on, you always get the compass. Even, you know, if you're not using directions, even on the dashboard screen, when you've got just the maps widget, you know, and then now playing and whatever else you see there. But I didn't know that, but it's in the map settings. So the settings app, the map section. And then also, I don't think this was in, I'm not sure if this was in previous betas or not, but what I recall is that, you know, we talked about the new kind of Waze mode that's coming to Apple Maps, where you can report accidents and speed traps and things like that from the iPhone. I didn't see it anywhere obvious on, CarPlay. And so I was wondering, are they not going to put it in the best place for it?
there is a UI for it. I don't know under what conditions it shows up. I think because they're doing like, you know, it's obviously like a test rollout at the moment.
Sure.
That maybe they just turn bits on, turn it off again. But on the CarPlay UI, on the other side to, so you know, you have the little like, the little panel that says like your ETA and then the miles or whatever. On the opposite side to that, so obviously in the US it's, you know, flipped to the UK, but on the opposite side to that panel, there's a button that lets you report stuff. If it's not showing up, I assume it's just part of like the beta trials or whatever, and they're only like rolling out to select people at once.
Yeah, I found it. But and it was more buried than like the, well, not as buried as compass, but I did find it. If you're using Waze, it's front and center. I mean, it's right, it's a big feature of Waze, so it's just, you know, a tap or two and you're there. And it's maybe the same on Apple Maps, but it's just hidden. You have to tap the screen to like toggle what UI you're seeing. And then there's a section that you tap into to go to it. And then you have the three options. But it isn't something that's like always present. And, you know, if you're trying, kind of what I'm thinking is if you're navigating and you want to report an accident, you don't want to dig through some menus on CarPlay. You just want to tap like one button and say, there's an accident here.
Yeah, I think they have that some kind of issue on the phone as well, because when you navigate on the iPhone screen, you get that little like pull up tab at the bottom, and by default the tab just says your ETA, your distance, whatever. But to actually see any actions, you have to slide the thing up, and then the report an incident thing is a button on that, which you then have to press, and then it comes up with the screen for the three options. So it's really like you're not going to be able to do that safely while you're driving. That's got to be something reported by, you know, someone sitting next to you or something.
Passenger, but, yeah. Or you can tell Siri. That's what they really want you to do, I suppose. But yeah, I was happy to discover both of those things, as I was driving over the past week. The other thing I wanted to mention this week is, because I know we both watched at least part of it, is the Billie Eilish documentary on Apple TV Plus. I think it's rated R. And, I have not actually listened to like Billie Eilish music. All I know about Billie Eilish is that she's in a bunch of Apple commercials and Apple like loves her to death. you know, I have friends who like Billie Eilish music, and you've listened to Billie Eilish music, but I could tell what a Billie Eilish song was by hearing it, but, I don't have like any in my library, but I just found that I had like an evening on over the weekend, and, it was the day after the documentary premiered on TV Plus. And I was like, I'm just going to play that as I'm falling asleep. And like an hour and a half later, I was like, I'm really getting sleepy now, but I've enjoyed this very much. And I think it's just because I like music and I like live music, and it's the closest thing to that we've had in many, many months. I haven't yet finished it because it's pretty long, like 2.5 hours. But what about you?
Yeah, I did watch the whole thing, but I watched it in like two parts because it is pretty long. Kind of funny, they have like an actual intermission. Like, I don't know when you stopped it, but at about the hour and a half mark, there's literally like it just comes up with a black screen that says intermission written on it. So it's like, oh, this is where your men are stop and pause, and then they have like the other hour when you come back to it. So I actually paused it at the intermission, I think, and then I watched the other like hour of it the day after. Like I like Aishi's music, but I wouldn't call myself like, you know, I'm not like a super fan or anything. You know, this when it's on when she releases an album, wherever I listen to it, oh, that's cool, and then it just goes to my rotation.
Yeah.
but I thought the documentary was pretty good. Like, and I haven't watched many, you know, artist documentary stuff, but the ones that, you know, snippets of stuff I have seen, it's like it feels pretty scripted or very like PR-y, like very controlled. I felt like this one was pretty loose, and I'm sure they've had, you know, people check over it or whatever, but it was like, it felt pretty genuine that they just literally had cameras following her around. And what's interesting about the whole thing is that, you know, Eilish was big in 2018, but she wasn't like the global superstar that she is now, right? Like in the last two years, she's literally exploded like many times over. And so they obviously had to start filming while she was a smaller artist. But then, like, the documentary literally ends with her winning, you know, 5 Grammys. So you
whoa,
see,
whoa,
like,
spoilers, the, spoilers.
Well, that, I mean, that's a lie. But yeah, like, yeah. you have spoilers on a documentary. It's a weird one. But,
sure.
Yeah, I guess. But like, that's just the. Like, it's very rare to get a documentary of that style where you have, you know, the before and the after in a way, right? Like, over the course of the 2 hours, you see how, you know, people care about it even in 2018, but it's not like anywhere close to the degree that it happens at the end, if you know what I mean. And I enjoyed it. Like, I probably wouldn't have watched it if it was like anywhere else, but because it was 2+, I was like, oh, I've watched this and I was like, damn, this is decent. And they released like numbers, or well, they don't release numbers, but they told like Deadline or something that this movie brought the highest number of young audience to Apple TV+ ever. It's like, okay, every time Apple releases a movie now, they just like leak to Deadline that this is the best record ever.
They had the highest number of Billie Eilish fans subscribed to TV+. They just can't figure out why.
Yeah, it's like every single time now there's an Apple TV+ movie released, they have some different way of phrasing, you know, a record. It's like record viewership, record impressions, highest number of subscribers over the weekend. And this one was a record for young audience viewership. It was like, how subcategorizing are you going to get it?
For a rated R documentary.
For a rated R documentary, yeah. And I don't quite know why it is rated R. I guess it's just like a lot of swearing
language
and stuff. But
yeah,
there isn't any like crazy, you know, anything else in it that I could see. I don't know.
Do they rate? They have to rate everything. Do they rate like For All Mankind?
Yeah, I don't know what it is rated in America, yeah, but it's definitely rated. Yeah.
There's a lot of F-bombs in season two, like more than season one.
Yeah, most of I think there's all those like quotas on like the ratings boards. You get so many swear words per episode or whatever before you have to be up a rating.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's why a lot of TV+ stuff is like MA, mature audiences, basically.
Oh, for TV show, it wouldn't be R. It'd be MA.
Yeah, and then R is normally reserved for like sexual content normally, or like extreme like nudity and stuff. But
yeah, I mean, and those are movies. So movies are letters, and TV is age based, and then mature audiences. Yeah,
yeah. In the UK region, they do rate stuff, but it also seems like Apple has been releasing a lot of stuff recently where they haven't waited long enough to get the UK to rate it. I think there must be like a huge backlog. So everything that gets released on TV+ at the moment is just labeled caution. It's like, okay, that just,
yeah, the rater
just
quarantine
means unrated, basically.
Yeah. It's like movie trailers before they have a rating, and they have to put, you know, like unrated at the beginning. Yeah. So I found that to be interesting. I'm going to keep watching it, but I liked like Taylor Swift documentaries, and I like YouTube videos behind the scenes of like writing music, and so I found that, you know, construction of a song to be really entertaining.
One other thing though, yeah, is, so you know that we had those reports like a few weeks ago where like Apple was it was part of that New York Times story on the China thing, where it's like Apple's not going to talk about China, they're going to squash the Gizmodo documentary, the Gawker series, right? One of the anecdotes in that was Apple had told producers not to show like Apple products getting damaged, Well, I mean, it's on a case-by-case basis, I'm sure, but in the Billie Eilish documentary, she throws her phone around and, like, breaks the screen and, like, she's using it half-broken, like, all the time. So they certainly didn't care about it in that one.
That's great. And then another thing I want to mention is CBS All Access has transitioned into Paramount Plus as of today, March the 4th. I had, only in the US, I had the CBS All Access plus Showtime bundle where for the price of one, you get two if you also subscribe to Apple TV Plus. and that deal went away, but I still have it. I'm, you know, grandfathered in. And so essentially like, and then also like TV Plus kept going as a free trial and now it's part of a bundle. So I'm now on Paramount Plus and I get Showtime and I just pay $10 a month and then I pay through the, you know, TV, through the bundle for, Apple TV Plus. And, I have to say I was really surprised. Like I really enjoyed CBS All Access just for watching, Colbert Late Show and then like news programs really like that's it. And I think over like the last few weeks, they've been stacking content inside of CBS All Access in to prepare for this transition. Like there has been some Comedy Central and Nickelodeon, like Viacom content. But now it's just like everywhere. And I'm happy because all this, and it is an Apple TV channel. So I get to do all of this, you know, with family sharing so that everyone that is in my family sharing group has access to the same channels as me, on my
you
kids.
Can watch it in the TV app without getting kicked out everywhere.
Yeah. You can download the content. You can watch it in the TV app. You can watch it on the Mac through a native app. You know, it's really cool. And so I was just kind of browsing around on day one and there are five seasons of Paw Patrol, which my son watches all the time. And each episode you can download for offline. The only hiccup there was it shows seven seasons because it's the TV app and you can, you know, buy season six and seven from Apple. And it's just like, okay, for now we only have five seasons. We're not going to look at six and seven.
Yeah, try trying to kid that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But five seasons is a lot of content there. Also Bubble Guppies and Peppa Pig are popular in my house and those are in there. I haven't really watched The Daily Show in a long, long time, like since Jon Stewart was the host, but that's largely because, you know, it didn't fool with cable for a long time. And, The Daily Show is in there. There's also a global edition, even though Paramount Plus is US only. So I'm not sure what the difference in those two are. But I kind of browsed around and there's a whole lot of movies and obviously Paramount movies. And I was adding a lot of stuff to my Up Next list to kind of, you know, save things to watch in the future. A lot of it is from the Smithsonian channel, which is, I think you can subscribe to that on your own.
Yeah. I think at least in the UK, that's a separate channel. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's one of those built in Apple TV 3 channels or through Paramount Plus. And a lot of the stuff I was like saving was from the Smithsonian channel and I had no clue that there was so much stuff that I'd like. But, you know, a whole range of things from nature to music history to space to, you know, all kind of stuff. And so that's kind of the highbrow stuff for me. And then I was looking and there's some, you know, classic Comedy Central stuff in addition to like the Daily Show episodes. And that's kind of the lowbrow part of it. And then Nickelodeon stuff for the family. And then even with like 60 minutes, I was watching, 60 minutes through CBS All Access over the weekend on Sunday night. And, they mentioned at the end of the episode that they would have content on Thursday for what's called 60 minutes plus inside of Paramount Plus. And sure enough, like that's one of the original content things that they're doing there. Mm-hmm. And it's like 20 minute interviews. There were three, at launch. And if you like 60 minutes, like I do, then it's just as good. You know, it's like stuff that's maybe more niche and just not going to be on the program, but it's the same style and everything. And so I found that to be, really cool. So I like Paramount Plus.
I'm glad it stays at least for the time being as a channel, because when they remove the bundle, because the bundle discount that you're like grandfathered into still isn't offered, like they took it away, remember? So
right,
you just have to buy on your own now. But yeah. When they took the bundle away and then they started, you know, removing it for third gen TV, I was like, oh, it's going to be like HBO Max where the channel's going to die as well. And you know, Apple TV channels was getting pretty thin on the channels list. So it's good to see that, you know, Paramount Plus is actually a channel. And so it sticks around.
I think my only complaint, I know some people have complaints about there just not being enough original content or just content in general. There are a ton of movies though and shows, series, and the news programs from CBS. So that's, you know, from before. But I do wish you could navigate through the channel on Apple TV channels for Paramount Plus by channel, like say, show me all of the Smithsonian stuff or all of the CBS stuff, all the Comedy Central stuff, all the Nickelodeon stuff. And maybe they have that or I just didn't find it, but I didn't see it to be an easy thing to get to. So
yeah, you were showing me like the video or whatever and the move, there were like 1,000 movies or whatever, but you just one list, one scrolling list without labels or sorting or categorization.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you went into the Paramount Plus app, like the actual app, then it'll be, you know, they'd have more of that layout, but
that's
it'd
true.
Be nice if they could port some of that.
Oh, and I wonder, can you sign in like how you could the CBS All Access into Paramount Plus, the
that's
app?
That's a good question. You should try that and let me know.
Yeah,
CBS was one of the very, very few Apple TV channels suppliers that let you also use the same credentials to log into the app. So
yeah,
if that sticks around with Paramount.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Paramount Plus.
Nice. We're also big fans around here of things. If you want to achieve a goal, you've got to plan ahead. And there's no better tool than the award-winning app, Things. It's a rich to-do list. It lets you organize by project. And for each of your goals, just make a project. Add the steps to reach those goals as to-do list items, and then you can schedule due dates as necessary. Every day, you can wake up and check what's on your daily to-do list with Things. Review the today do list, order the items in priority, and get to work. Of course, you can easily push back things that can be done later. Things syncs with all of your Apple devices. They have rich native apps for all of Apple's platforms. That's on the Mac, the iPad, iPhone, and Apple Watch. Again, they're not web apps, they're native apps, and they look and work great. And of course, to-dos sync automatically over the air, so they're with you wherever you are. And recently updated for iOS 14 and macOS Big Sur, Things offers new widgets that show your to-dos and projects directly on your home screen. And they've added rich support for the Apple Pencil scribble feature, so you can write out your to-dos on the iPad rather than just type them. And now, we've talked about Things before in this show. I know, Zach, that you're a very long-time user of Things, right?
Yeah, I've used Things since 2013, so it's been a while. They recently had a big update on their Watch app as well a few months ago, and it was a total rewrite where the Watch app itself talks to the Things cloud, and you don't have to worry about it syncing with your phone or things being out of date. And I know that was a big undertaking, so that's awesome to see if you like good Watch apps. And the other thing is one of my habits is I don't want my email inbox to become a to-do list of things to get to because I have Things for my to-do list. And they have a great feature where you can email to a Things email address that's specific to your account. And what I often do is, oh, this is a task, you know, for next week or so. Let me forward this to my Things email address and it shows up in my inbox on Things. And then I can schedule it and it only shows up in front of me on the day that I have to work on it. So, it really helps me. My whole life is in Things from work to professional to creative. And, I'm glad they're sponsoring the show.
So if you haven't tried Things before, head over to the website thingsapp.com. That's thingsapp.com. Learn about everything the app has to offer and download a free trial for your Mac. And of course, they're fully native for Apple Silicon on M1 Max 2. When you're ready to buy, head to the Mac App Store or the iOS App Store and search for Things. Whatever it is that you want to accomplish, Things can help you get there. Try Things today at thingsapp.com.
All right, I've got an update on Paramount Plus, the app. It says, looking for CBS All Access, you're in the right place. And then my login for CBS All Access works.
Okay, nice.
And
nice.
It says, dive into thousands of newly added episodes from BET, CBS, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, and Smithsonian Channel, plus brand new originals. Wow. And that's the iOS app. So cool. I like that. And then of course there, they do have like buttons for the different channels. It kind of reminds me of Disney Plus, how they have, you know, Disney, Marvel, they have, Discovery Channel or National Geographic.
It's like the Smithsonian. Discovery's got its own streaming service.
Yeah. which I haven't checked out yet, but I would probably like it. So I'm giving myself like $100 a month budget for services. And, you know, as things get bundled together, I can add more into that. And I think I might have room for Discovery Plus, but I haven't checked it out yet. Let's talk about other things though for a few minutes. So we got new software betas throughout this week, not all at once like we often do, but I think there was a day for macOS, a day for iOS, and a day for watchOS. What's new in macOS that we saw on the first day?
Yeah, so there was a weird thing that was spotted like in the code, and that's that Rosetta, which is the kind of emulation, that's not, you know, the translation process system that Apple introduced with the M1 launch to make it so that apps written for Intel architecture can run on the M1, on the M1 ARM platform, essentially at, you know, not full speed, but close to it, you know, like 30% performance penalty, which is way better than, you know, competing emulation systems that we see across the industry. So Apple did a good job there. But, and the way they do it is that they essentially, when you download an Intel binary, they do like the code translation on install. So you only pay the penalty once, you wait. And so that's why if you launch an Intel app on M1, the first time you install it, or maybe after an update, it, you know, bounces in the dock for a little while, but then successive launches, it's instant, right? Or at least very fast. And so this is their technology. They call it Rosetta. It's Rosetta 2 because they originally had a Rosetta version back when the PowerPC to Intel transition happened. But what's kind of weird is that in this beta, code references were found that basically suggest that Apple can disable Rosetta for certain regions. And so, and this is both upfront, so you get your laptop and it never can install Rosetta, and retroactively, so they could revoke the privilege at a later date and say, oh, we're sorry, Rosetta is no longer available in your region. And at first, this was thought to be brand new to this beta release, but some people have found examples of where they've like seen the error message before, like last year, and it just happened accidentally and they rebooted and it, you know, went away. But clearly it's been, you know, in the works, and this certainly drew attention to it. It's kind of strange that, you know, there's now a risk or a looming fear that next month or tomorrow Apple could be like, yeah, well, you know, those, all those Intel apps that you're running on your M1 Mac, sorry, we can't let them launch anymore. And that's kind of bad, right? Because, I mean, one of the huge things that makes the M1 transition such a success is that you don't have, you know, unless you're talking about very strange edge cases with certain applications, most mainstream apps that, whether they're written for Intel or not, can just run, whether they're written for ARM or not, can just run on the Macs, you know, without issue. And the big part of that story is the Rosetta layer. And if you're in a country that, you know, they just turn Rosetta off for one day, you're going to be pretty mad about it. I guess there's a lot of speculation about why this lever has to be in there. Probably some legal thing. Maybe Apple's expecting like a lawsuit to come out of it, because obviously part of the Intel to ARM translation involves doing like looking at the way that the Intel app runs and, you know, modulating that over or transmogrifying it into like an ARM compatible version. So maybe Apple is anticipating some legal backlash there, where Intel like sues them for something, or, you know, somewhere down the chain, and so they need to be ready to turn it off at a moment's notice. Kind of like the when was it Huawei or was it Samsung? When it must have been Huawei, right? So it was like 2017 where the iPhone got banned in China temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what company it was. It was some company. It was part of the, you know, the crazy patent debates. There was a thing where like the way in which the apps dismissed from the multitasking switcher, remember this, right? So obviously we just slide up from the top and swipe the apps off the screen like a deck of cards. Well, in China, they, for a while, to avoid some, you know, patent ban, they changed it so only in China the animation to dismiss was different, right? And it would just like fade in place. And so similar how they got that geographic region control, they've also got it on the Mac for Rosetta. And so far, we haven't seen anywhere, like a country where it is banned, but the threat is there at least that in some regions, maybe your M1 Mac might not be as universally compatible with your software as you first thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the Rosetta Stone at the British Museum in London?
I have not, no.
Yeah. I had to go to the Wikipedia page for the Rosetta Stone to know where this name came from.
To get
from.
Context for the icon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that would be super frustrating. You know, ideally, eventually this won't even matter, but it would definitely be frustrating if all of a sudden certain apps just didn't work anymore. Certain malware wouldn't work either, but certain apps wouldn't.
Yeah, because Rosetta is funny in that it's never like, it's not pre-installed either. Like, you can get an M1 Mac, and the first time, like, you can get an M1 Mac and never have Rosetta installed. It only, like, prompts to install it the first time that you actually run an Intel program, right, on the machine. It, like, comes up with a special alert. It's like, this program can't run. You need to install Rosetta to run it. Do you want to do this? And it's like, yes or no. So you can, like, if you're really purist, own an M1 Mac and never install Rosetta on it ever. I guess if you just want to, like, feel cool that you're only using, you know, Apple Silicon specific software. But that modularity also now we found can happen in reverse, and theoretically it could go away, which is too bad.
Yeah. Can you remove Rosetta from your Mac?
I presume so. Like, I don't know how you do it, but there must be a way, surely. Like, if you can, if Apple can take it away based on region, there must be some, like,
I think you have to go to a, I think to uninstall it, you have to go to a region where it isn't allowed anymore.
You have to take a special journey over. Yeah. It's like those, do you remember, like, the original implementation of ECG on Apple Watch where you'd have to go to the country for it to activate, but then you could leave the country and it would still stay for you. But they, you know, they patched that or whatever, but that was how it worked originally. So a few people would, like, go across the border and then come back again.
Looks like you have to use a command line. Use a command line to get this to go away.
Thing to get rid of it, really.
Yeah, but it's not super clear. Other people have asked this question too.
I mean, I think it's weird that they don't just have it pre-installed, like, from the beginning. Like, why? But maybe these legal threats or whatever are part of the reason for that. And it's like,
yeah, that's great. You can hear my kid. He's really excited about Rosetta. The other thing that's new this week is the Find My App. And I think we all noticed this from iOS, from the Find My App on iOS. But I was just looking at my Mac, and I installed macOS, you know, whatever the latest beta version number is, on the day that it came out. And it's all, this items tab that we're going to discuss is also there on the Mac. So I guess people just look at Find My on the Mac. But it's there.
Yeah, so this is the tab that has been, it's been, like, since I think iOS 14.3, you've been able to, like, make it appear, because we were talking about this at the end of last year, that people are like, oh, that means AirTags are launching instantly. And it's like, well, maybe, but it's also just there as a developer thing, so that if you're developing a accessory that works with the Find My network, like those Bose earbuds we talked about before, right, that you can actually just bring up the UI in the Find My app and play around with it. And, you know, test and debug.
Is it Bose or is it Belkin?
Oh, sorry, it might be Belkin. I can't.
Because I remember thinking they're just, like, really crappy headphones that no one would buy.
It might be Belkin.
Just,
sorry,
it's just like Apple went to their partner to make these, so they can't, you know, say no one uses it.
Yeah. It might have been Belkin. I can't remember now, but look it up. It probably is Belkin now you say it. But obviously, so theoretically, there could be a whole ecosystem of Find My accessories being developed right now. That we've only basically seen that. That tag can appear for, but everyone kind of knows, like, secretly that, like, this is the interface for AirTags whenever they do launch.
And yeah, it's the Belkin Soundform Freedom AirPod competitor.
Yeah. The fact that now the items tag is now just visible for everybody, like, you don't have to be a developer to go and turn it on. I mean, you have to think, right, that signals that the AirTags are coming out, right? Like, surely? I mean, the UI doesn't actually say, it doesn't have any of the language for the AirTag stuff. It basically is just very generic. Like, you can
accessories are the things. Yeah.
Yeah, you can now track non-Apple accessories in the Find My app, like headphones or luggage, they say. But, you know, that's obviously not going to be very pervasive in the market. So the reason they built this whole system out is for the AirTags to ship, right? So
I mean, in front of me, keep track of your everyday items, add accessories or other items that are compatible with Find My, and they will appear here. Now, like you, and listening to this to be discussed elsewhere, I do think there's misunderstanding that I think it's really possible that they just, you know, AirTags come out whenever they come out. We have no idea when, and that this can also be here, and it's probably compatible with.
Yeah, they
like
are
those.
Technically independent.
Yeah, it's probably compatible with the Belkin things. And, like, if anyone else ever uses those, and of course, if you use those, if you use the Find My network, you can't have your own, like, Tile equivalent where you have your own network of finding things. So it's Find My or bust. But what's more telling, I think, is that there's this learn more button that goes to a support document that isn't out yet. And again, that could just be because they want to tell you how to pair your, you know, Belkin Soundform Freedom headphones with FindMy. But, it's probably that's the document that's going to mention, you know, AirTag features and stuff. So
yeah. And there has been like
hopefully
vague unsubstantiated reports that the AirTags are shipping soon. So we'll just keep hoping, I reckon. Like, I mean, let me put it this way. Until the AirTags come out, I'm never going to use this tab. So it's just going to sit there on the welcome screen. One thing that is kind of cool in it that I'm pretty sure, originally I thought this was new in this beta, but I think this setting's just been there all the whole time if you did enable the items tab before, like as a developer, I just never did. There's a little option on the Mi tab, so that's the fourth tab in the app, which is called Item Safety Alerts, and it's on by default. And what that basically means is, this is Apple's way to try and limit the abuse cases where, like, say, imagine the AirTags exist, you buy one, and then I like slipped it in your bag surreptitiously without telling you, and you never found it, right? So that tag could then essentially become a proxy for your location, right? So I could essentially track you without you knowing about it by just, you know, putting a AirTag somewhere on your person or somewhere in your possessions, and then just watching where the AirTag moves around the world, right? And so Apple's got this item safety alert stuff, and the idea of this is to prevent against that, to stop people from doing it. And the way the item safety thing works is that if your phone notices an item tag that's not associated with you, but it is following you around, it will give you an alert that basically says, there's an unknown item following you around. And so you can be notified of the fact that, you know, someone else's tracker thing could theoretically be watching you, you know, or, quote, stalking you around the place. And this setting's on by default. You can turn it off. And the setting to do so is, you know, literally in the top level of the Mi tab. So I can imagine that this thing comes up with quite a lot of false positives, because if it was a thing that like only, you know, 1% of people were going to be inadvertently affected by, they'd have just put it in setting somewhere. Because it's like on the top level of the Find My app, I assume that this tracking, this anti-stalking tracking, has a lot of cases where it just doesn't, like, it just detects things which obviously aren't stalking. Like, I'm thinking if you lived in like a flat or an apartment, as you would say, with, you know, two or three people and they all have their own tags, well, you know, it's going to be quite likely that your movement and their movement is synchronized, right? And so you could walk around the whole day with them and your phone might recognize their tag as being something that's, you know, unknown to you and tracking you, right? So I reckon that's why they even let you turn it off at all, because if the feature worked flawlessly, they wouldn't even need a toggle for it. But because the toggle is there and ready and waiting, you have to assume that there are some like edge cases that are fairly, you know, not like the common case, but fairly frequent enough for them to justify having an option to turn it off anyway. But I think it's cool that they've even thought about this, right? That, like, you know, they could have shipped it without this and then they could have had a PR controversy when someone inevitably, you know, capitalized on it. But they've got it there up front, which is nice.
That's what happens when you develop it for 2+ years.
2.5 years, yeah. Yeah. We've got another 6 months roadmap on this product. What other things can we add to it? Now, I'm sure, like, they're, you know, they're a privacy conscious company, and this is perfectly in line with those kind of ideals.
Yep. And then another story, we talked about this a few weeks ago, where iOS 14.5 beta has this ability to sort of, you know, assign a music or audio service to Siri, so that whenever you request things, that it runs through that service instead of the defaults, which are, you know, Apple Music and Apple Podcasts, Apple Books. It was gone in beta 2. It's back in beta 3 with some new wording that said, you know, it makes it more clear that this is based on Siri intelligence, which is, you know, everyone's favorite thing is let Siri guess for you. But I guess Apple didn't love the coverage of it being called, you know, described as setting your default music app, even though it was always presented in context of this isn't an equivalent to setting your browser or your mail app, because there's no UI for it. It's just through Siri. And the only place it's relevant is when you use Siri. But they sent a statement over to TechCrunch where they said, this is not a default. We're not using default music service, you know, apps here. This is different than the email and browser. And they really leaned on it being, we're just trying to make Siri understand what you want without you having to say with Spotify, with Pandora, you know, with Audible, however, whatever service that is not the default. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we all get that. It's just kind of funny. They're like, do not call it default.
Yeah, but it's like, being intelligent here is not the right thing to do. Like, in the earlier beta is iOS 14.5, the limited Siri interface that there is was basically just like, choose your music service. Now in the latest beta, they changed the language a bit. So it says like, I'm learning how to choose the right audio apps for you. Which one do you want to use to listen to this? Which obviously, you know, more strongly implies that it's not an actual default. It's just a suggestion or, you're helping the system out. But I just want to be able to set the default here. Like, and, you know, for music, I don't really care because I'd pick Apple Music anyway. But like, if you're just thinking as the altruistic customer, who wants Siri to automatically choose for you? Like, I just feel like it's open to so many cans of worms of annoying behavior. Like, Siri Suggestions, which is the thing which recommends you apps to launch, right? That's the top row of Spotlight when you pull it down. And it shows you like four apps that it thinks based on the time of day and based on your previous patterns of behavior that you want to launch, right? And quite often, when I do go to that screen, I'm like, you know what? That's actually the app I want right now. So I click on it. I save myself a few characters from having to search for it. And there it is. But if they made it so that you unlock your phone and Siri just launched you one of those apps, it would get so frustrating because it's not going to be right all the time. It's just not going to be. Like, and it only has to be wrong like 1 in 20 times. Even, you know, just 1 in every 20 requests does it have to be wrong for it to be annoying, right? And so if you just want to listen to your music, how are you going to depend on asking for your music without without qualifying it with the name of the app? Because you're just not going to be able to trust that Siri's going to do it, right? Like, if you tell Siri, oh, I want to use Spotify, and then, you know, arbitrarily, in a way that you have no understanding why it's making the decision, one time you ask it to play an album, and it just plays it on Apple Music instead, you'll be like, what the heck? I'm never going to do this again. I'm always just going to say, play this music on Spotify. Like, adding this intelligence, it's not going to help anyone unless it is really dumb and it is literally a default app saying. Like, if they have any layer of intelligence to it where, like, in different contexts, use different apps for the same, like, domain, so for music, it's just never going to be useful because people are never going to be able to trust it enough, or it's not going to guess right enough for it to make any sense. So everyone's just going to carry on doing what they did before, where they say out the whole request and then say, on Spotify or on Pandora or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you don't want it to be smart.
come on, Johnny and Andrea, what are you doing over there? Or whatever your name is.
Like if the, you know, if the standard behavior was this automatic thing, and then you could go in settings and just say, look, I don't want any of the intelligence. I don't want the recommendations. Just use this app that I've picked. I could understand that, right? Because, you know, they're trying to be helpful, but you don't. I just know people are not going to want it to work this way, right? And all the other Siri intelligence stuff, they don't just do it for you because they know it's risky. Like, the things where it's like, we'll set an alarm for you when when we think you need it. They don't actually set an alarm for you. What they do is they show a notification on your lock screen that says, do you want this alarm? And then you can tap and confirm it, right? And it's that confirmation step is very important. But when you're talking to Siri, you don't know what app it's going to choose for you until you finish your request. Like, you don't have any opportunity to intervene or change your mind or override what Siri's going to choose for you on its own because you don't see any of that context. You just ask your request and then you just have to see what it does, right? So that's why no one's going to depend on this. No one's going to use it in that way. People are just going to carry on saying, play this album on Spotify.
Yeah, yeah. So
which is stupid. But
as I described in my head, that's the nebulous Siri audio feature and not default music setting. I think that might fit the bill better. All right, let's take another break and thank our next sponsor, Helix Sleep.
Are you sleeping on an old mattress? You deserve better than that. And that's where Helix comes in. Take the Helix Sleep quiz in just 2 minutes and get instantly matched with a mattress that is perfect for you, tuned to your sleep preferences and your body type. Helix knows that not everyone is made the same. They have several different models of mattress, like super soft, medium, and firm. And there's even a version that is designed to cool you down if you sleep particularly hot. Now, I know I'm pretty jealous, Zach, actually, because I know you did the quiz and you actually got sent a Helix mattress to try out. So what do you think about it? How'd you like it?
Yeah, the quiz is super helpful because I would have no idea how to guess about a, you know, with mattress settings to choose otherwise. And it asks you questions like, how do you sleep on your side and your back on your, both? And it's like, yeah, I sleep always, do you want firm, medium or soft? And I'm like, I don't really know. I think medium is good. And, that paired me up with the Midnight mattress, which I love. And I was actually out of town for a couple of weeks this month and away from my mattress. And when I got back, I was like, I was audibly happy about being back on my mattress. So it's wonderful.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a mattress, just take the Helix quiz, order the mattress that you're matched with, and it comes shipped to your door for free. You don't need to visit a physical store. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. So just go to helixsleep.com/9to5Mac, take their 2 minutes sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a custom mattress to give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you can try it out for 100 nights for free. If you don't love it, they'll come back and pick it up for you. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for Happy Hour listeners. So go now to helixsleep.com/9to5Mac. That's helixsleep.com/9to5Mac. Thanks to Helix Sleep for sponsoring the show. Yeah. Yeah, so, we've been kind of hearing, rumors from left and right. The iPhone 13, 12S, whatever you call it, it's going to look, mostly the same as the iPhone 12 lineup. There's still going to be 4 phones, and there's probably going to be 120Hz refresh display and upgrades to the cameras and maybe LiDAR or more models. And everybody wants a Touch ID sensor to come back. But we haven't really had the definitive report from someone that we from a publication that we really trust. And Kuai is essentially that, right? And so what he says for the 2021 phones is that the design will be mostly the same, but you'll get a smaller notch. So it'll still be a notch cutout for the camera sensors and the Face ID thing on the front, but it will be smaller, probably less wide. It will have a 120Hz refresh rate display. They're going to use LTPO screens, so still OLED, but the lower power version to make up for the doubling of the refresh rate, which is fantastic because ProMotion on the iPad is so nice and I've been wanting it on the iPhone for ages. He says that it's still going to be Lightning and the ultra wide camera will get an upgrade. And right now, the ultra wide camera is definitely lower quality when you just take a picture of it next to, the wide angle or the telephoto lens. So any upgrades they can provide to the ultra wide camera is fantastic because it always just looks, a little bit more spotty or soft, right, compared to the other lenses. But that's the headline. He doesn't say that Touch ID is returning. He doesn't say it's not, but he doesn't say it is. And specifically, he mentions that they'll all carry on using Lightning because last year he had a report out that said one model in 2021 would be portless, right, and only rely on wireless charging. He's basically backtracked on that now. So for the time being, the MagSafe ecosystem isn't as well developed. Apple's not got any interest in USB-C for the iPhone, but they're not going to ditch Lightning either. So essentially, Kuo saying that the iPhone 13 lineup will be a lot like the iPhone 12 lineup. Answering our question from before about the iPhone Mini, he says the Mini's going to carry on. There will be another 5.4-inch OLED phone this year. So in terms of 2021... it's basically what you'd expect, but it's nice to hear someone concretely say it,
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, who would want USB-C on the iPhone? The same port as on the Macs and the iPad Air and Pro and, the one that you could charge with the same cable as your laptop. That's annoying.
What people, the people that want those are the same people that want a HDMI port on the side of their laptop.
Yeah. It's just so practical. Why would you want to do that? It's just so practical. I'm sure you're happy about the 120 hertz refresh rate idea. Yeah. Do you don't have an iPad with ProMotion yet, do you?
No, there's one in the family. So I
use it
and I'm like, damn, this is nice, but I don't. I still have the 2015 iPad Pro and yeah. I really want to upgrade that too, but Apple's annoyed me too much with the iPad OS software. So I still kind of stand my ground on that one.
Okay, I hear you. And then let's go to 2022.
Sorry, one other thing.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
LiDAR, there was a rumor last week that we didn't cover on the show, but it got a bit of popularity that all of the iPhone 13 models would feature the LiDAR scanner on the back. Quo says that's not the case. The high-end models are the same, and only the two high-end models are getting the LiDAR scanner. So basically, that previous rumor is wrong, according to Quo. They'll carry on getting the scanner. The 2021 phones will get slightly larger battery capacity. Basically, Apple's going to be saving space on many of the components internally. So the phones will be slightly heavier than the iPhone 12 lineup, but they're not going to be any thicker. That includes reducing the size of the internal modules of like the camera system and the SD card slot. But the actual like external chassis design should look essentially identical. They'll just be a bit heavier. Obviously, the larger batteries help with 120 FPS screens because just rendering twice as much, you know, uses more battery. So there you go.
Lovely. And then next year, so that was this fall. Next fall, well, the first half of next year, we expect to see a new iPhone SE, according to Quo. And I know that there was rumors, maybe even this year, about the larger iPhone SE, so equivalent of like a Plus, you know, an 8 Plus model. But with a different design, like with Touch ID on the side of the phone, if I'm getting this right, it's just from a long time ago.
No, that's right. Yeah, that was rumored for this year originally. Yeah.
Yeah. No mention of that, but Quo does mention the iPhone SE getting an update next year in the first half. And the big change will be, you know, a newer processor. So 2 years after the current SE, and then including 5G. And I guess the big story there would be that you could get 5G in a phone that, you know, is from $400 and up instead of a phone that's, you know, $700 and up. And so that'll be, I guess, a boost for 5G adoption in terms of just having the handsets out in the wild. And then in the second half of the year, so meaning fall, you know, as things go, Quo says that at least some models of iPhone, you know, in 2022 fall will switch to what he calls punch hole. So, you know, a hole punch, design instead of the current notch design. And that's to mean that it's the front camera is kind of floating in the glass and there's a screen around it, but all the other parts of, you know, the true depth camera system are pushed, you know, above the phone, including speaker and everything. And so it doesn't interfere with the display. And you don't have to think too hard about what it would look like because Samsung already does this with their S20 and S21 phones, Galaxy phones. I have a friend who has an S20 and it looks futuristic to me. Like, I don't like the other stuff about the phone. You know, the way the rest of it looks, the design, the you know, screen quality and everything. I just prefer the iPhone is what I'm used to, but I do look at it and think, you know, oh, that's, it's kind of neat. I'm not sure how practical it is besides just like looking more slick than the notch does, because it's still an area that you really can't draw around. But you know, I guess if you're scrolling through it, then it's more immersive than the notch is. And I, for one, would welcome this change on the iPhone. It would feel like a nice evolution. I don't yet feel like the current iPhone design is tired in the way that the previous design was with the, you know, forehead and chin.
Yeah, the iPhone 6 era.
Yeah, but this would be a good evolution of the current design. And, you know, we saw this happen with Google's Pixel phones and, you know, Samsung never went notch. They just had bezels and then they had the little, I like to call it an island. Not a hole punch or punch hole. But I would love this on the iPhone, you know, as long as everything, you know, operates well. cause it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to like hide a camera behind the screen and you know, you that's just too sci-fi. I remember when we first talked about all these different rumors, it was like, that sounds like sci-fi if they were going to be able to do stuff like this. And it's still science fiction. So.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the 2023 section in a minute, but for 2022, yeah, that's not happening. Like, I 100% agree with you, right? The front of a Samsung phone, the high-end Samsung phones, aesthetically, it looks better than an iPhone front, because what is everyone competing for? They're competing for thin bezels and all-screen designs, right? And the iPhone has less of an all-screen design than a modern Samsung phone does, or a lot of other Android phones do, because all of them have moved already to the, you know, the hole-punch circular cutouts for the front camera. And the iPhone has, you know, the lip or the notch, whatever you want to call it, with the ears on both sides. So just in terms of screen-to-body ratio, you know, the iPhone's losing. However, what the Samsung phone doesn't have to contend with is it doesn't have the Face ID sensors in it, right? It only has to have a hole for the selfie camera. It's harder to imagine what Apple could do to, like, make the notch a punch hole. Like a hole punch, because it's just too, the amount of stuff they have to fit in there is just too big for a single circular hole. Like, obviously they'd move the earpiece out to the top, like we see with the Android phones do, but, you know, you're gonna, right now they have three holes for supporting. One of them's the front camera, and then one of them's the thing that sends out the infrared, and one of them's the thing that receives the infrared, right? So, like, because I think if you're going to have two holes, right, so if you can have two hole punches, that's going to look bad compared to, you know, a thinner, smaller notch, which is, we're getting the thinner, smaller notch this year, right? Like, the, if you have just one circular inset hole, that 100% is a better option than the notch design, right? But if you're going to have like two or even three holes across the top, I kind of feel like the notch is a better way to go. Now, Quo doesn't say whether, he just says a hole punch design or a punch hole display design. He doesn't say if it's going to have one hole, two holes, or three holes. But I think if they did something where it was like a two separate circles, it would look worse than, you know, a thinner notch type scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, so part of the rumor is that, you know, according to Quo, that, you know, some of the phones will, and because of yield rates, they might only be on the higher end phones. So you would say the pro phones and not the non-pro phones. But if they do have enough, that they can make a capacity, then in that case, it would be all the phones and the flagship year for next, you know, next year. So, and another thing is, even though you and I agree on this, there's definitely a lot of varying opinions on if hole punch is better than notch, you know, if it were to come to the iPhone.
I can't even see why people think that the hole punch design is worse than the current notch situation. Like, the notch is pretty big and the Android phones just have one little circle, right?
Yeah, one argument is that the notch is signature to Apple's phone design, but that's like saying, I think, that the, you know, the previous chin and forehead were signatures. Like, no, those are compromises. It's not like something that you're, you know, trying to achieve. It's just, it's signature because that's the best you can do right now. And we ran a poll because my Twitter mentions from writing the first story were just explosive on people, debating one way or the other. So we ran a poll to see, you know, do you think that the notch or punch hole design, which do you prefer? And it was 46.5% notch and 45.7% punch hole. And then there, then like 7%, it was like see comments. But it's totally split. No, I do think that by the time, like, in reality, if Apple does this, then you and I will be happy. And people who prefer the notch will just have to buy the new iPhone, and people will, it'll grow on them too.
If you could get used to the notch in the first place, could get used to changing from a notch to a little circle, right?
Yeah. Like, would you give up the front camera and, I guess, FaceTime video calls, like, to have a uniform screen, if you could like hold your iPhone upside down and you see what it would look like without the notch on it. You know, and what Samsung does is they have, you know, fingerprint sensor in the display. And so they don't have to worry about Face ID. But of course, you know, and then the camera's there. But if you just wanted a truly, you know, full screen experience, would you trade it off for not having the front camera?
I think I'd do it the other way and just ditch Face ID and go back to like a Touch ID button on the side. Like, yeah. I wouldn't want to lose the front camera. I think the front camera is way too important. Like, look at A, look at the market, right? Selfies are everywhere. And then B, in my personal case, FaceTime, I do it too often for not to not want the front.
Yeah, runner. Yeah. For me, yeah, definitely.
Like, I think the lack of mention of Touch ID on both the 2021 and the 2022 roadmap is kind of crazy. Like,
sure.
Yes, doing it under the display would be nice, but if you can't do that, just put it in the power button. Like, the current global environment, it just makes Face ID less good. And even before the current global environment and craziness happened, there were people waiting for the return of a fingerprint sensor, right? And the fact that Apple is not seeing, at least according to quote here, is not interested in doing it, not this year or even not next year, it's kind of wild. Like, and if they want to go punch hole, you know, like, if it was my choice, it was either you're going to have two punch holes to get Face ID or one punch hole and you just put the Touch ID back in, I'd pick the Touch ID option. Like, I just would. Like, I think I like Face ID. There's nothing wrong with it, but
how would you do an emoji?
Well, you wouldn't anymore. Like, just, that feature that everybody
that's truly pro. That once truly you give pro. Up an emoji,
like, you know, in an ideal world, you'd have both, right? I don't want to lose Face ID if I don't want to help it, but I think a compromise of another hole, like having two holes or three holes, is pretty rough. I'd prefer the notch in that case. Like,
put the camera on the watch and then not have a front-facing camera on the phone and have it remote.
What's your Touch ID, right?
Yeah.
How much do you want it back on the iPhone? A little, you don't care, a lot? What was...
Watch unlock in the current software beta is really useful. So in the context where it's not even about wearing a mask in public, but like wearing, you know, a motorcycle helmet where my face is partially obscured, being able to unlock from the watch, as long as it's reliable, is a big save for me. Cause oftentimes in that case, I'd also be wearing gloves. And so my fingerprint wouldn't work either. And so it's passcode or bust. But, you know, if I were calling the shots, I mean, obviously the best thing is to have both options, you know, Touch ID either under the display or in the side button, iPad style, you know, and Face ID like as options. So, even if Face ID was like more of an angled thing, you know, it gets on the top part of your phone and you kind of like do a little gesture, scan your face, put it back up. Yeah, there's a lot they could do there.
Yeah. Like I value promotion a lot, but if after promotion, I feel like Touch ID would be like on my feature list of the next thing that I'd like them to do, to be honest. Like, I just think you look at the market and a lot of people are like, I like the fingerprint sensors for the Android phones, and the highest end Android phones already have it under the display, right? Like, I'd be happy if they put it in the power button. I think they almost, to remain competitive at some point, need to do it under the display as well. Like, people don't like Face ID. There's always going to be a segment of the market that just doesn't like Face ID. They're always going to be turned off by it. And, you know, the entire rest of the phone market has gone the other way and had gone the underscreen fingerprint sensor route, right? Like, Apple's basically the only manufacturer who, you know, has basically gone all in on 3D face scanning. And 3D face scanning is cool and different, but it does have compromises. Just look at the top of the phone right now, and that's why you've got the primary reason why you've got a big notch there is because of the Face ID sensor, right? So it's something to keep in mind. I hope that, you know, Quo's just omitted the fact, and maybe it's going to be in the power button after all.
Yeah.
Now, the phone that we already want is what is coming up in 2023, but first let's do our final ad of the show. We are sponsored this week by ExpressVPN. There's a lot of VPN providers out there. Let's face it, there just is. You hear them. You hear about them everywhere. You see them on YouTube ads. You see them everywhere. You may have even used one before. But here's why ExpressVPN is the best. If you haven't used a VPN yet, or you're using one right now, this is why ExpressVPN is superior. ExpressVPN doesn't log your data. A lot of the really cheap VPNs out there, well, it's the you are the product thing all over again. Most of the really cheap VPNs are slow, and they sell your data onto third parties in order to make money. ExpressVPN doesn't do that. Instead, ExpressVPN developed a technology called Trusted Server that makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your information. It's all private and encrypted. ExpressVPN is also really fast. VPNs have gotten a bad reputation for slowing down your connection. But ExpressVPN is not like that. ExpressVPN is simply fast. You can get super fast internet speeds and stream HD video with zero lag or buffering. And ExpressVPN is also super easy to use. You don't have to type stuff in or configure stuff. Just launch the ExpressVPN app, press one button, and boom, you're connected. It's so easy. There's a reason ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN from publications like Wired, The Verge, CNET, and many others. It's because it is the best. Don't settle for slow speeds and privacy-invasive data collection. Protect yourself with the VPN that you can trust. Use our link, that's expressvpn.com/happyhour today, and get an extra 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up.
All right. So in,
now we go into fantasy land.
Yeah. Two years from this fall, what's in the pipeline for 2023 on the iPhone?
Like the 2023 rumors, if they come from anyone but basically Quo or Bloomberg, I like don't even bat an eyelid at them, right? Because they're just so far out and they just feel so flimsy. But you know, Quo has a good enough reputation that you can at least consider what he has to say, right? Part one of his 2023 roadmap is that Apple's going to launch a sub $600 phone because they're going to drop the iPhone 11. And that will have a 6-inch LCD screen. So basically, that'll just carry on being, you know, the cheaper phone in the lineup. But that's kind of boring. What's the cool stuff is that A, Apple is supposedly testing an 8-inch, 7.5 to 8-inch foldable iPhone for 2023 that would use a flexible OLED display. So, you know, we've seen foldables in the market. We've seen, you know, it started with the Galaxy Fold and then the other ones. I'd say they've been around for, what, like about a year and a half now. They haven't set the market alight, right? I don't think they're extremely popular, but they clearly have the cool factor to them. And if companies can solve the issues with the creasing and the, you know, the unreliability and just the kind of awkwardness and the thickness and that kind of stuff, if they can solve all those problems, foldable phones are going to be pretty awesome. And it would be stupid for Apple not to at least experiment in that space, right? So, Quo says Apple has not yet officially kicked off the foldable device project, but it thinks that if Apple can solve key technology and mass production issues in the next year or so, then it could launch foldable iPhone in 2023. So, that's the foldable phone. Clearly, Apple's like investigating it, but don't bet the farm on it, as it were. However, the other cool thing is just before the ad break, we were talking about, wouldn't it be great if you could have both Face ID and Touch ID? Wouldn't it be great if you didn't need a notch, you could just have a little punch hole camera? But what about, Zach, if you could have no punch hole at all? Quo says, the new high-end iPhone in 2023, assuming Apple doesn't face delays with development, it will feature an under-display fingerprint reader, a periscope telephoto camera, and a full screen design, a real full screen design with no holes or no notch in the second half of 2023. What is there to complain about once you take away all things from the screen?
I kind of want to know like what things that Samsung is going to be doing in 2023. Yeah. So then we can know like what's next. You know. Okay.
I mean, it sounds great. Let's be realistic.
Yeah.
And you say 2023, that's only 2 years away. Like,
yeah.
And I think MKBHD had like a video of like a all screen phone that still had a front camera, and they did embed the camera underneath the screen, but like it was like a 0.3 megapixel camera and it was like really blurry. So like the quality was like terrible, right? But it was at least a proof of concept that these things are achievable. And so I can see Apple doing it. Clearly this is the direction that every phone manufacturer wants to go, right? Like, you can argue about what's prettier, a notch or a hole punch, but if you can have none at all, then, you know, that's what you like. You mentioned it before, but turn your iPhone upside down, cover up the bottom little notch bit with your thumb, and you just have a nice little glimpse of the 2023 future of just a full screen phone, right? Like,
yeah.
No blemishes, no imperfections, no compromises. You're going to get both Face ID under the screen, and you're going to get under display fingerprint reader. Like, what is there not to like?
Just has to exist first.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like, you know, between the Apple glasses and the car, well, let's hope Apple can finish development of a full screen phone.
Yeah. 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 So lots to look forward to the next 2 years, according to Quo. So stick around. It's a couple more topics just on, again, wrapping back up to TV Plus. I wanted to mention For All Mankind season 2, episode 2, cause that came out last Friday. And in my notes, I binge these to turn my review, but in my notes, I remember, you know, we interviewed former NASA astronaut Garrett Reisman, about a year and a half ago or so. And, he was on that first episode of the For All Mankind official podcast. And he's in this episode. So, you know, because we interviewed him and everything, I'm very familiar with who he is and what he looks like. So, he's in a shuttle and then he's in the even clearer scene where he's walking out behind Molly Cobb. And, that's him. So I thought that was neat.
It was a cute cameo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because normally he's like technical advisor, right? But obviously they gave him a little scene to do, which is cool.
That's right. And then Ted Lasso won an award. What did Ted Lasso win?
Golden Globes. It was nominated for Best Musical Comedy Series. It didn't win that, but it was nominated. What it won for was Jason Sudeikis was Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy Series. So then, and it's a weird like category, like musical or comedy. You think, why do they say it? They basically mean anything that isn't a drama, right? So, but. You know, it's a pretty prestigious win. That is Apple's first Golden Globe. Last year, they were nominated like 3 times for the morning show, but they never actually won. This year is their first win. Jason Sudeikis took home Best Actor for Ted Lasso, which is cool.
Once more than I have. And then Apple, I put in the notes, Apple dropped Calls. They put out a trailer for a show called Calls, but there's no visual to it. Like, what is this?
So this is kind of funny, right? Like, this was one of Apple's first pickups, like way back in 2018, before TV Plus had launched or anything like that, before they even officially confirmed it. Because Ehrlich and Amberg, they joined Apple in like the middle of 2017, and they started buying projects like at the end of 2017, right? That's when The Morning Show and Amazing Stories and Servant and stuff were originally picked up, like the end of 2017. Well, yeah. Early in 2018, Apple acquired the rights to a French series which is called Calls. And they got the back catalogue of like the 10 episodes in French, and they'd ordered a new season reboot. And I think we talked about it offline or whatever at the time. It's like, this sounds a bit odd, but okay. And because I think that was the first time that it had been reported that Apple actually acquired like back catalogue episodes, right? And so it was always in the back of my mind, like calls. And then the service launched and nothing happened. And then, you know, the whole of last year went by and nothing happened. And then they just had their like, spring press tour thing in January where they announced like 8 different shows that are coming in the first half of the year and stuff. And then this week they were just like, oh yeah, we're launching this show in a week's time. It's like, oh, and it's cool. So I was like, wow, it's cool. It's the thing from, you know, that's been in the back of my mind for like 2.5 years. Oh, cool. You know, cool. It's cool. And then what it turns out to be, and the original French series is like, it's 2. I just never noticed that part, is that the whole show takes place over the phone. So you only hear their voices over like, it's like 6 12-minute episodes or something, or 9 12-minute episodes, sorry. And they're like audio stories, you know, audio adventure, audio drama, thriller style. But it is a TV show. It's on TV Plus. What you get on the screen are like, you know, waveforms and visuals that kind of accompany the story, but you don't see the actors' faces. It's like a weird blend of podcast. I mean, it's basically a podcast with some like pretty visuals placed at the top of it. It's just a weird premise for me to like take a hold of, because like it just feels like if Apple had relaunched the original podcasts initiative, it would just be on there, but they don't have that yet. So it's like, well, we put some visuals at the top of it and here it is on TV Plus. Like, because they have like big names like doing the voice acting, you know, they like Karen Gillan used to be on Doctor Who, they've got Nick Jonas, they've got Jaden Martell, they got Mark Duplass, who also stars in The Morning Show as Corey, right?
Yeah.
So they've got like these massive names, but you don't actually see any of them ever in the whole show. It's just a bit strange, but
it's going to be Tim Cook comes out and he's like, remember the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus ad? And it's got Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake. Yeah. And like, he plays it and he's like, do you know who they are?
Who these are? Like,
it's gonna be him after each episode. Like, what
do you think? Like, do you think this is weird? Am I stupid here?
It is weird and different. And it kind of reminds me of like the carpool karaoke, Planet of the Apps era of Apple's video approach. And this does come from, like, I looked back at the story in June 21st, 2018. So, you know, nearly 3 years ago, you know, and it was described as, you know, this is from Variety. The tech giant's entertainment arm has given a series order to Calls, an English language adaptation of the French short form series on Canal Plus. The English language series will be a co-production with Canal Plus. And they say 10 records found, 10 different stories, no picture, you're alone in the dark. So they kind of got the
gist of it. I just never really internalized the no picture part. Like,
yeah,
I thought it'd be like they're talking on the phone, but you like see the actors like acting over the phone. Do you see what I mean?
Sure.
Like, yeah. See their emotion or whatever, but no, it's like computer graphics on the screen and then you hear the stories. Like, I'm sure they're cool stories, but like, why is it not just a podcast? I don't know.
Yeah. They say it allows audiences to experience short stories through real life audio sources and minimal visuals. And then there's a YouTube video attached from the Canal Plus version of the show. And I'm looking at it and there's like, by minimal graphics, it means that there's just like this weird effect of like it has nothing to do with what's happening.
Yeah,
and then they have the word Calls on Fire.
More like fanciness in the CGI, or whatever. But the point is, you don't actually see the actors ever, which is kind of bizarre. But they
and the coming back to Canal Plus, I've been when I read Paramount Plus, I say Paramount Plus in my head because of Canal Plus, and here we are again at Canal Plus.
Oh, and Apple made a completely redubbed version just for the Spanish market. They made the whole show with Spanish actors just for Spain for some reason. It's just a weird project. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
most of TV Plus content, like, even if I don't like, if it's not, I'm not target market, I can understand it, right? And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. I get it. Like, even something like silly, like, you know, Mariah Carey's Magical Christmas Special or whatever. But this is just like very strange.
Yeah. 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 You know, we've been taking a break from the video version of this podcast while I'm traveling and my son is, you know, running around the background.
Causing havoc.
He actually got bored and went into the bedroom, you know, right after the last interruption and closed the door. But, once we get back on video, maybe in the meantime, we should do like strip video from Calls in French and put our voice over that.
Well, I'll try it when it's out, but I can't imagine I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't harm your iPhone in Calls, or, you know, Tim Cook cancel it, I guess. So. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can give us feedback at happyhour@95mac.com. We are on Twitter. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. And Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZMAO.
And we will talk to everyone next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.